Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and oh boy, we're going to shift your paradigm tonight with a wonderful visitor, a wonderful, what would you say, purveyor of magic and the shifting realms of power, magical man, Peter Calhoun. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thank you very much, Veronica. Good to be on your Paradigm Show.
Well, one of the things I wanted to open with you is saying, take that word power. Your recent book is Life Without Limits, Discovering the Secrets to Personal Empowerment and a Life of Ecstatic Joy. And this is a wonderful book for everyone. But the word power keeps hitting me, like how we interpret or misinterpret that. And I thought, oh, Peter, this is a good thing for you to look at and tell us about.
Well, this is my newly released book, and it can be ordered through Amazon. But it is, we use the word power so loosely and irresponsibly, but I'm talking about power in the true sense of the word. And my hypothesis here in the book is that from the time we were toddlers, we have had messages, disempowering messages given to us throughout our childhood and into adulthood. And we've bought into this. It came from our teachers, from our priests and rabbi and pastor. It came from our family and parents. And it wasn't their fault because they were given the same message that we are limited beings, mm-hmm. that we have virtually no power to act in any major way in this world.
And, how did you wake up? You started off being an Episcopal priest.
Yes, I did.
Well, you didn't start off that way, but you educated yourself
yes,
into
I did.
That vein, yeah?
Right.
So what happened? And one of the things I want you to mention to people is your vision of how you're talking about empowerment and how limited we are, but your vision that opened up in you about how the world is contained. I really like you to talk about that.
Well, this was really, in a sense, one of the things that got me on my path and ultimately led to my break from organized religion because it was a whole new concept, and I knew that I had to have the freedom to express this, but it was the last year that I was a priest in the Episcopal Church. I had this out-of-body experience, and I saw the earth from about a third of the distance to the moon, and I saw people. There was some kind of ceiling over the earth, and people were contained in it, and people were stooped over. They were unable to grow. Mm. They were like stunted or like hunchbacks. Mm. And there were only a few people that had the ability to break through this ceiling. And I asked, what in the world is this all about? There was some being, angelic being next to me, and he said that the elite of the world have, or some of the elite of the world have created a ceiling of limiting ideas, limiting concepts that have prevented us from being able to grow, and only the strongest people are able to break through this, and this is why we're here. The being said to me that I was part of a very large grouping that had come to Earth to help liberate Earth, and we're part of what is known as the Family of Light.
Uh-huh.
And it involved not just one star system, but many. And we represented these different star systems. We had talent that was known throughout the galaxy, apparently, that we had the ability to come into any system and break it up. We were known as system busters. Any system that was stuck or contained, we could incarnate. And even though we'd have a total loss of memory of who we really were, we would intuitively know what was wrong with that system, and we would know the way to break through it. And so we were here to demonstrate this.
It's back to power, isn't it? I mean,
yes, it was. And said that this is what really, really stuck with me. Said the being said, we are beings without limitations of any kind.
Great.
And that my particular soul path was to remember that I had activated these soul powers that are inherent in all of us, and in the past, in other lifetimes. And I was here to come to remember who I was, to remember how to activate these powers. And my task was to demonstrate this, and to demonstrate these as powers that are inherent in all of us. And not that I was anything special or anything like that. And I was told that I wouldn't have a teacher in this lifetime. And I thought, how am I going to do this without a teacher? I don't know how to awaken these powers. And then what happened is that they awakened with an incredible spontaneity.
Hmm.
And
were you afraid, Peter? Or were you?
No. It seemed like the most natural thing in the world.
Okay.
And so I think one of the first times this happened is that I was called to a hospital in Atlanta, and I was still a priest at that time, but I was in the process of leaving the organized religion. And the lady was dying of cancer. I was told that she had about two days to live. And so I asked her if she wanted healing. I'd never done healing before, and she said yes. I was hoping she'd say no. And so I put my hands on her head, and I gave her healing. I didn't feel anything. And so I assumed that she had died. And 6 months later, I heard about this woman that was going around town talking about the priest that had healed her of cancer. She was out in 2 days,
wow,
completely healed.
Wow.
This was the beginning. And then, you know, I could fast forward, I guess, to different times. When I left organized religion, I took on a group of students. And one time when we were out in Canyonlands, this was one of our first outdoor treks that was a vision quest. And we had laid some sticks on the desert floor for a sweat lodge fire. We were going to light it later that afternoon, and the sticks spontaneously combusted.
Wow.
And there were about 12 of us that actually saw it. We just,
wow,
there was no fire, and then there was fire. We'd never had a fire in that area. It was just a sandy desert floor. And
that's pretty powerful, Peter.
Yeah, and so... So anyway, the story goes on, and it was 2 years later. I had a different group of about 18 people, and we talked about what had happened before. There were several people that had been there before, and I said, this time I'm going to intend that we have spontaneous combustion. I've been told that I have this ability, and so I stated my intention that we would again, that this group would have the experience of that, of spontaneous combustion in the fire that had been laid. I think everyone thought I was kidding. And it was actually the next day we were preparing for the sweat lodge. And about, I guess about 10 of us saw this. We were looking straight at the wood, and it burst into flames.
Hmm.
There was no smoke, no warning, no nothing. Then, to our amazement, there were two piles of kindling that was stacked about 10 feet away from the fire in different directions, and they burst into flame right before our eyes. We intended the spontaneous combustion. This has its humorous aspect, because I remember it was shortly afterward that I knew I had this ability, but sometimes it would happen. I learned that the fire elementals and the wind elementals, that these wonderful, wondrous beings that we work with, they have great senses of humor. And I was working, counseling a young high school senior in Boulder, where I was staying at the time, about his addiction to cocaine. And I was really disgusted because he wasn't paying any attention, and he wasn't sticking to his part of the deal. And so I told his mom, after I talked with him, I said, I'm going into my therapy room, my medicine room, I call it, and I'm going to ask the fire spirits to light a fire under his ass. I used the word derriere, I think, in my public lectures, but anyway, She said, do whatever's needed. This was his mom. So I went in there, and 5 minutes later I came out, and I could hear he and his body, his buddy coming down from upstairs, and I could just see his legs, four sets of legs on the coming down the steps from the rail, and all of a sudden I heard this profanity, and I knew that it wasn't like him to curse like that. And then I heard this swatting of somebody against a pants leg. He came down, and his whole crotch was charred and smoking.
Oh, my God.
And he was unharmed. He was protected. But just my intention, my stating that he would have that fire, to light a fire under him, he needed that fire element. And so it was a literal response. And so these are the sort of things that began happening to me spontaneously.
So you were beginning to be in chat with the different elementals, was that?
Yes,
it?
Yeah, I worked. And then I also began doing ceremonies for to end droughts in different areas. And I was having like 100% success. One of the first ceremonies I did was in northern Arizona. And I had an apprentice with me. We were up Oak Creek Canyon. I don't know if you've been to.
Yes, I know that.
Yeah, and
beautiful.
And I'd been there just a few days. I'd planned to be there for six months on a sabbatical. I'd rented a home. And I told my apprentice, I said, we need to do a ceremony to end this drought. It was a 2.5-year drought in northern Arizona. And the springs were drying up and everything. So we went to a place that felt very like a power spot, and we did the ceremony. And totally unexpected and unpredicted, a storm came in. The next morning, I woke up. This was in February, and I heard limbs breaking, and I looked out, and there was a foot of snow on the ground.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was totally unpredicted. And so this was the storm of the decade, in fact, that came in, and they had the wettest spring in the season. And I learned that a lot of times you get overkill. You've got to be careful.
Have you learned to moderate it?
Yeah, but that definitely ended the drought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have a couple of stories in your book about how you tossed, I wish that house would be burned up, and then it burned up, that sort of thing, right?
Oh, yes, yeah. It's the power. We have to. One of the things that one of my mentors, Rolling Thunder, who was a Shoshone Cherokee medicine man, would say is when the powers began awakening, then you have to be especially careful and responsible for what you say, because it can affect not only you, it can bring harm to others. The way I put it is that it's like floodwaters. Water can produce electricity, but too much creates a flooding, and that brings great destruction. And so when you say something, once you are connected with your power, then you can find really serious things can happen to people around you. I remember I got angry at someone, and he went home and got bad burns on his arm. He put hot grease, and another person I got angry with had a heart attack later that afternoon. And I felt somehow, even though I didn't intend it, that it was the wrong use of energy and I was being shown.
Well, tell me this. Can you actually turn that around? So, for example, if you want, well, obviously you made someone better. You helped someone get better who was sick. You can turn it around that way, too.
Yes, you absolutely can. And I was, because these powers were awakening, I was shown a way not to use it. And, of course, there are people that sometimes misuse it deliberately, but we're talking about a power that can, you know, transform people's lives and can transform the world. And this power is within all of us.
But you said it's within all of us, but yet there's a group of kind of light workers that come from multidimensional sources, you were saying earlier. What kind of percentage is that on the planet?
The information I've been given is 300 to 400,000. I'm sorry, 300 to 400 million.
Oh, really?
That's almost 500 million. And what do we have, about 6 6.5 billion people on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So we're that's quite a number when you think about it, and yet it we're still in a great minority.
Mm-hmm.
And
are we activating one? I think I'm a light worker too. So
yes, you are. You're more than a light worker. You are that.
But are we active enough to be activating the ones that aren't
one
aware
of,
yet?
One of my colleagues was given the information, and I think this was from, he was actually given this from an Air Force convoy that came when he and some friends were doing a ceremony on the desert of New Mexico. And they said, "What are you doing?" He said, "What do we mean?" He said, "Well, our very sophisticated satellites detected an unknown energy source coming from this area." And he told them what they were doing, and she laughed and said, "Oh, this is just, you're just part of the awakening that's going on all over the planet." He said, "We at first were getting these sources of energy, not just in this country, but all over. And we were concerned about them, and we discovered it was coming from light workers." He said, she said, "Did you know," obviously she was one of us, she said, "Did you know that when someone has activated their light body, that they have the power, they send out the power of 15,000, a city of 15,000 people."
Woohoo! I love that.
The power of 15, if you can imagine, when you're doing a ceremony or you're in sending out your intentions, that it is equivalent to a city of 15,000 people.
Wow, can we run our car without gasoline?
Exactly. Well, we're working on that. That would be nice, maybe to get rid of gasoline.
So what is the goal here? Do you get some kind of information about, like, can we turn around, you know, the shift? We keep hearing about the shift, but it seems the struggle for that shift to happen is very intense, right? Can we make a difference in time?
I think that we can make a huge difference. And I think that it is not anything so much we have to do. It is more just being, just allowing and being. People say, "I know I'm supposed to do something," when they, you know, come to me and for private appointments, and but I don't know what it is. And I said, "You've come here just to be, to hold the light, to hold the vibration of positivity." And when I say positivity, I mean in the total sense, positivity in the sense of joy and compassion and courage and solitude harmony and inner harmony and balance. And when you hold that vibration, or we can say when you hold the light, then you're doing it for the whole Earth. You're helping the Earth Mother in her transition. Because she's going through an initiation just like we.
Mm.
She's moving into a new level. And you're also holding it for humanity. And then some of you are holding it for the nature realms, too. You've come here. So this is, without this, it would be a disaster. There's too much negativity in this world. And things would probably just blow up.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the degree of negativity. So we're here to bring that positivity, to create a balance, so that people will have a choice. They can choose the light instead of darkness, and the Earth can have a path of light to complete her initiation, Gaia.
Well, it's very exciting. I feel. Tell me this, are there guides or are there beings of different dimensions helping us? I mean, like, who can help us, keep us stoked when we get frustrated?
Oh, yes, Veronica, we can call upon. We all have our own helpers,
mm-hmm,
that are in the next dimension, and they are very attentive to our needs and our calls. They know our needs, but it is more powerful if we can verbalize and ask. I find that many people that are light workers feel like they shouldn't ask for themselves. And this is a total misconception. We should ask. You know, we are called on to love others as ourselves. That means not more than ourselves, as ourselves. I find that many people that are caregivers and light workers have difficulty asking for themselves. And so this is a lot of times where we have to focus.
We kind of breed the martyr at times.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So talk about, if you don't mind, I'd love to know how you perceive, for example, karmic entanglements between people and souls. Can we step out of all that? Can this light...
Yes, and again, in some of the earlier teachings and some of the ancient wisdom that has come down, we've been told that, you know, if it's karma, you have to work it out.
Right.
Karma is just a wake-up call. It is just showing us what needs to be done. And once we recognize the lessons that have been that we need to know, then we don't have to live through some kind of agonizing punishment, as people think. Karma is not punishment. It is simply a way of pointing out what needs to be done. And so we came in with various wake-up calls. Once we recognize that that's all it is, we can make these corrections.
I was just wondering if we can actually evolve our way out of those attachments. You're talking about the lessons, and I feel them kind of as like strings, vibrational strings of attachment that sometimes pull us under.
Yes, at a certain point, there's a realization. And at that point, we can let go a lot of these strings or threads of attachment, and we don't have to name it, identify it, and do it one by one. It's just a falling away. And it's I think it's like the caterpillar, you know, that is transforming into a butterfly, and it gets airborne. And that's what happens. We don't have to keep pecking away at the different individual threads, just like the caterpillar doesn't have to be working with this. There's this transformation. This is a time of transformation for us.
It really is, isn't it? It's very exciting. Also, you write a lot in your book about relationship to nature and animals and elementals, and your partner, Astrid, is very good with that. So I would love you to talk a bit about how people listening can relate to nature in a way that empowers both as well.
We've come here and as a part of a much greater whole. And it is part of the oneness that we have with all life that I'm talking about, that we are truly one with the animals and the great trees, the grandfather and grandmother trees and the flowers and the rocks and with all life here on Earth. And this is not just an idealized statement to express a reality. This is reality in the highest order. We are one, and we have estranged ourselves from the animal kingdom. For example, there's been a breach that probably occurred a long time ago in which we separated ourselves. We organized religion. It was partly responsible for this in that it indoctrinated us from the time we were toddlers that animals don't have souls, nor do they have minds even. And therefore, we can do whatever we want. And this, of course, has been used as a justification for greed and exploitation, slaughtering animals, experimenting with animals in a cruel way in laboratories. You know, the scientific community has their own dark, hard secrets that have to be brought out into the open and have to be forgiven. So, yes, we are connected. And we have, because we've bought this false picture about who the animals are, what they are, we're in a state of separation. Animals are able to communicate telepathically with one another, and they try to communicate with us telepathically. They learn very quickly that we are unable to do it or won't do it. They are able to also communicate, we've found, at least the larger species to communicate at great distances telepathically. And so this is the place to begin if we realize that this is the universal means of communication, not through the spoken word, not through voice, sound vibrations. And then this is the way to develop a much deeper, more meaningful relationship, not only with our beloved animal friends that live with us, but the wild creatures, you can communicate with them just as easily. We call deer to us, and they show up. We call red-tailed hawks in the area to us, and sometimes within a couple of minutes, they're circling right overhead at a low altitude. And it seems like an amazing thing, but it is when we realize they are telepathic, they have some type of mind similar to us, different in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
We had a bobcat recently that crossed us ran in front of the car one night when we were driving about a mile from our home, and we stopped the car and we said, "Oh, we're sorry we missed you. Would you please come and let us see you again?" And within about a minute, she's come out, and she goes out to the middle of the road and turns and faces us and sits down and gazes at us. And I realized that she was not only, we said, "Well, we would like to invite you to our home and to visit us sometime." And so we thought nothing more about it. But it was about 3 or 4 days later. Then she appears on our patio. We're sitting in the living room, looking out at mostly glass onto the patio. And she comes walking along the patio wall, stops, and as she did before, she sits down on the patio wall and faces us. This time, I read her thoughts. She told me that she had a litter of kittens, two cubs, and would it be okay if they visit? Would it be okay, in fact, if they hunt on our property? And I gave the telepathic message. I said, "You can do this, or your kittens can do this, but to take no more than their share, no more than what you need for survival." And we thought no more about it. And it was about, a couple of months later. I was obviously like a teenager. Male bobcat comes strutting along the same wall, and he asked permission. I realize he's come to see if he can hunt, and we again said yes, but no more than your share, because we love our birds. And we know you have to survive. This was all done telepathically. So this is how amazing it is when we establish this communication.
Well, you call one section, you say that we all have the ability to call.
Yes, yeah. To call any species of animal to us from the wild. I mean, if we know they are out there and exist.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in...
I'm going to try that later.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in my book... now I see I have to stop and think, which book is it? It is my...
There's a thing in Life Without Limits about calling.
Yeah, calling is about Life Without Limits. In the first book, I gave an example of how we warned some deer that would graze at a great distance across the field from our house, which was a country little cottage that we were renting outside of Knoxville. And we warned them. We heard gunshots, and we knew hunting season was opening the next day. And they would be in danger because they did allow hunting, the landlord on that property. And we said to them telepathically, Astrid and I, because we were out of voice range, not that that mattered, and we said, it'll be dangerous for you to be down there because hunting season is starting. But you can graze around our home and you'll be safe until hunting season is over. That night, and this to me is still amazing, though, we heard this bleating sound outside of our living room. We were sitting there with a friend that was visiting, and we walked out onto the porch and saw there at the steps of the porch were the three deer that we'd seen grazing. Two of them were grazing, but one had its neck stretched out toward the door of our home, And we knew this is the one that was making that sound. Hmm. Not only did they show up, but she called us to let us know that they were here. And so anyway, it was an amazing thing that when hunting season ended, we didn't have to tell them. The next day, they were out grazing in their usual habitat.
Hmm.
But you can also just, call if you want the deer to come to you. It helps if you have had contact with them, like we did with the bobcat.
Hmm.
If you've had contact and talked with the deer before, then you can, and you've developed this bond, then you can call them. But you can also, for example, Astrid one time called bears.
Oh my!
Out of the woods when we were camping and we were disappointed. We have a relationship with bears. Most people say, "Why do you want to call bears?" but we have that affection for them, and they know it.
But if you can call them, you can communicate. So
exactly.
They would be safe.
And she
right?
said, "We haven't seen any. We were camping in the Grand Tetons." And I said, "Why don't you call them? You can do it. You've done it many times. We both have." So she called them. Just stood out. Yeah, at the edge of the forest, and just said, "We'd like to have you visit us, and we love you, and please show yourself." And it was the next day. We were driving along, and a bear crossed the road. It was a little Forest Service road, and we stopped to get a better look at it, and we asked it to come back, and it turned around and came back. And then that we left from there to California, where we were to do our seminars and private appointments, and we were in the Sequoia National Forest. And again, we had bears cross in front of the car. And then when we got home to our home near the Smoky Mountains in Tennessee, where we lived before we moved out here out west, again, the bears just showed themselves to us. This time when we were getting water from a spring. So it can happen, and it does happen, and just trust that you don't have to do anything special. It doesn't require any special incantations or anything.
Well, you also say here you don't even need to have a ritual or ceremony for things to...
No,
can you
it
talk
is two
a bit
things.
About that?
Mm-hmm. Visual, the imaging, and the heart feeling.
Hmm.
So if you have this feeling of affection and appreciation from your heart, your feeling nature. And when you have that, or expressing that appreciation, when you're imaging them coming to you, then that is a combination of those two. The communication is through feeling and through imaging.
And telepathy
with the animal kingdom. So these are... This is the way to do it. And
how can you know if you're in the high heart?
That is, that takes practice, because I find that a lot of people that are talking all the time about being in the heart or coming from the heart, they're in their head thinking about being in their heart.
Oh.
It's really easy to do, mm-hmm. because we are a culture that has become, bound to our mind, to our rational thinking mind. And so I find it helpful to put my hand over the high heart and try to feel from that area. By putting my hand in that area, it seems to help me focus. And this way I know that I am coming from the heart and not the head thinking about being in the heart. And so that's the way I suggest doing it.
That's good. That's helpful. Well, Peter, were you an intuitive your whole life, or did you just burst into it?
No, I probably was, but I was kind of a regular guy, and I think for guys, it didn't happen as easily. That this was somehow seen as a women's thing.
Women's intuition.
Yeah, intuition and. And so I had to learn it from some extent.
Okay. So I want to ask another question is, what was the nature of your near-death experience? Did you have, was it a physical or was it just a sudden opening?
There are two things. One is that I did have a near-death experience and then I had a heart attack. And
ooh.
And I...
Interesting. And you're teaching us about the high heart.
Great. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And this was some years ago. And I was alone living in Highlands at the time. I decided, well, it's time to leave. My life seemed completed then. I couldn't have been any more wrong because I hadn't met Astrid. I had got a divorce and it felt as if my life was over. And I said, okay, well, I'm ready to go.
And you were pretty young, weren't you?
I didn't call the hospital. I didn't call 911.
Hmm.
And then I'm going through the tunnel. And lo and behold, this woman, not a guide or an angelic being, but someone that was very much incarnate, and a friend appeared and said, Peter, you can't leave. You're needed here. And so I came back, called 911, and went to the hospital and got heart surgery.
Hmm. Were you disappointed, Peter?
No, I realized it was the right thing to do.
Okay.
But I was reluctant. When she told me, though, I was on automatic. Huh. Immediately went back. I didn't question because you're not in your rational mind on that side.
That's a different thing.
Now, the things that I mentioned are quite different. I've had experiences about 7 or 8, 9 times in which I narrowly escaped death, and it was through my intuition or very magical guidance from the universe that I was able to avoid death. And
oh.
You know, one of the times I talk about is I was camping, doing a vision quest in the Canyonlands at one of my favorite sites, and I was there alone. And it was I was told there was a gust of wind, and on the wind I heard a voice, and the voice just said, it'll be dangerous for you to stay where you are. You need to move out into open countryside. I didn't want to have to move my sleeping bag. When you're on a vision quest, you don't want to have to get up and move. And I started not to, but I said, you know, I always, in the past, I found these things to be true, as subtle as they are. And so I really realized I dare not disregard this, and so I moved. And that night, just as predicted, gale force winds came up suddenly. And the next morning when I got up, I saw I was in this huge cottonwood forest and that went along a little stream that went through the desert. And I saw lots of foliage down and small limbs, but nothing more. And when I got to my site, the cottonwood tree, which must have been 200 years old, must have been 5 feet in diameter. It had split 10 feet above the ground. It had split off and came down butt in first, right on the imprint of my sleeping bag. So
wow.
I would have been pounded into the ground.
Wow.
Yeah. And so that's how these amazing things would happen. Hmm. I had this lucid dream to cancel flight to cancel flights twice. When I was flying from Denver to Boise to do workshops one winter, that the plane crashed, and I dreamed that a number of people died, including me, in that plane crash.
Hmm.
It was, well, that winter I had a flight connected with Continental, and I remember the dream, and so I canceled it, and the plane crashed. And I drove all the way across Wyoming to Idaho, to Boise, where I was doing a workshop and private appointments. Well, the plane did crash. There was a storm that came in, and the wings iced up. And so when the Continental flight took off the ground, it rolled over because the wings had iced up.
Oh.
And so my life was saved again another time. Again, a tree episode. We were Astrid and I were camping with my stepson, her son, in the Grand Teton National Park. And this afternoon, windstorm came up. There was no rain, and we went. We thought we were going to get drenched. We ran into our tent to take cover. As soon as we got in there, we heard this crack above our heads, and we thought, you know, our hearts went out. And a tree, a lodgepole pine, split off and came down 6 inches above our head. It broke the tent. And so there we were, within 6 inches of being pulverized again.
Wow.
It was the only tree. We were interviewed by the rangers. It was the only tree that had fallen in the area, you know. So it was, so again and again, things like this happened at times that it was deliberate. I had the high priest from Haiti many years ago that tried both psychically and physically to kill me because I had helped one of his prize students to get out from that dark system. And she had, but he took it out on me. He flew all the way from Haiti to Atlanta, where I was living, and confronted me personally. And then there were both physical and psychic attempts. So I do have great protection. And I could go on and on. There are numbers of others that...
Did you think that you called in the tree limbs?
That I called in the tree limbs?
I'm just being cheeky.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Yes, because that would give me a good story, of course.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, I want to ask another thing, which is you mentioned here about the car, the ascension body. Because whilst you're talking about these powers, I'm really conscious that you're here, that there's such a huge round-the-world service to help break out us out of that cage kind of thing that you described at the beginning. And I'm going, are our ascension bodies, is our all of that, is this, do you see what I mean? Is this part of the picture? Is this something you're teaching about as well?
Well, our ascension bodies are, and I do speak about this and on my latest book, Life Without Limits, which is Amazon. But on info@petercalhoun.com, you can get information about that. There's a whole chapter on forging the ascension body. And I would refer listeners to check that out. Because it gives information that I don't, to my knowledge, you're not going to find anything anywhere else on the ascension body, partly because it comes out of my personal revelations and experiences. As you know, I mentioned several times that I did project in my ascension body that I, in Life Without Limits, I came in apparently with a fully developed ascension body. But it is, at this time, it is the mandate for our species to develop their ascension body. You certainly have an ascension body that is fully developed, Veronica. I can feel that even if you haven't had experiences with it. But many people here, perhaps most light workers, are really forging that ascension body. And there are ways I give methods to help speed that up.
That's wonderful. And also there's a section here on how I'm always interested in the multidimensionality qualities that we have that are kind of dormant in most of us.
Yes.
But you talk about being able to materialize or bilocate, but in different forms. Can you talk a bit about that? I love that little section.
Yeah, well, it's happened
in different
ways. I want to
do that.
Yeah, one time, on one occasion, I was with a group in the Grand Tetons. We were camping for a week outside of the park, and these were serious students, and we were going through many practices, and we were having a lunch break, and I was sitting on a log with six of the staff and apprentices, and suddenly I find myself standing about a half a mile away at the base of a hill looking up at a trailhead, and I'm scratching my head wondering how I got there. Meanwhile, they're scratching their head and saying, well, Peter was just here. He was just talking. What happened to him? Did anyone see him leave? So at that time, I saw this very bedraught woman that was with us coming down, and I knew that she had was having a meltdown. She had had been involved in an abduction. A crazy person with guns and bombs that broke into her house one Sunday morning.
Oh my!
And she was held hostage there. And so that was 6 months ago. She'd had a lot of psychotherapy, but the psychotherapy doesn't always get to the core pain. Mm-hmm. And we knew that it was going to come out in one way or another, so we were watching her very carefully, the staff, that is. And so I knew that that core pain was coming out, and when she got to me, she started shaking and hugging me and shaking and trembling and then sobbing and then screaming. The screaming started. It was all coming out because he actually blew up a bomb in her house, and it had nearly knocked her arm off. It disfigured her arm. And she had many surgeries. And so she's screaming. So I put her down on the ground on a jacket, and I start rocking her. That is a good thing to do if you ever have anyone that's hysterical or about to go postal, is to put them on the ground and then put them in their fetal position on their sides. Put the knees up against the chest. And it is that fetal position and the rocking. You start rocking them, holding the hips and shoulders.
Hmm. And so
it will calm a person down, even the most agitated person. It's a pretty amazing thing.
Can it break them out of their pattern?
Yes, it breaks out of their pattern.
Wow.
And I think there's something
good
about the fetal position. It brings back the memory of the prenatal being rocked, that rocking position.
That's really wonderful. You work with a lot of people. For this book, Life Without Limits, you also do is it online seminars with them or classes based on how people can evolve their own powers?
We are actually doing events here at Sedona where people come to Magical Sedona and for 3 or 4 days. And this is on the website again, www.petercalhoun.com. That's the website.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel free to call info@petercalhoun.com, however, for information. It describes these events in June that we're having. One is on the healing methodology that we teach that is so amazing. And another is on shamanic training.
Hmm.
And I invite our listeners to check that out.
I also, it sounds wonderful. I'd love to come. If I could just do everything I wanted to do, I'd be a busy girl.
Oh, I know.
But I like,
often I said that.
One section of your book is full of like little tidbits, like the kinds of things that encase us. Let me see. I'm trying to see with it. Non-ordinary wisdoms that are quotes from people. And you have all kinds of self-help in this
book.
That
was actually an afterthought, but we've gotten a lot of response. And people really, really liked that. I found it helpful. I really liked working with the one thinking out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
I gave a number of examples, maybe 60 or 70, of hypothetical situations, which weren't really hypothetical. They were situations that Astrid or I or both of us had encountered, and how we used non-ordinary techniques to resolve them rather than traditional measures, and so that I really enjoyed writing along with the non-ordinary wisdom. So
I'm just looking at that right now. One of the things that makes me think of thinking out of the box is one of the stories in Life Without Limits is the woman and her daughter who were surrounded by sharks in the ocean.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Do you want to tell that story quickly?
That is truly an amazing story. It's a friend of ours that lives in North Carolina. And I won't say too much because I think she wants to put it in her own book, but she was given...
It's a stunning story.
In a most unusual way, she was given the information one day that here is a way that you can call the dolphins, and this person, this very unlikely man, made the sounds for her. It was just a series of extended vowel sounds. And it was, several months later, she and her daughter were in the ocean, standing at waist level, and it was late afternoon, and they noticed that all of the other bathers had left, and they discovered that they were being encircled by sharks. And they didn't know what to do because there was no other way they could rush toward the shore because they were being encircled. And the daughter, who was in her 20s at the time, said, Mama, why don't we use this method to call the dolphins? And they started making these odd sounds, these extenuated vowels. And they said the biggest dolphin they had ever seen leapt over the ring of sharks into the midst to be with them. And the sharks were out of there in a second.
You know, I got tears in my eyes from that story, even though I'd already read it. It's a very powerful story.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story. Oh, yeah.
And so I think are we almost at the end, Bob? Oh, okay, we've got a few more minutes left. What about spirituality, and how about, like, are we evolving as a whole species? Are we going to break that case around the Earth? Are we going to become unlimited beings?
I would say that if we are as a total species, that would be an encroachment of free will, because obviously there are some that are freely choosing not to evolve, that they want to hang on to the old way of in which the wealth and the power and the knowledge is amassed in the few, and the rest are like worker bees to serve the needs of these elite. They're not ready for this. There are others that simply haven't evolved themselves. But I would say a large number are ready. They're at varying levels, but they are ready to make a leap into a higher level. These will be the ones that will inherit the new Earth. They will inherit the new fifth-dimensional Earth. I said all along, even though so many of my colleagues and teachers disagreed that it wasn't going to be an instantaneous thing when we were suddenly on the fifth dimension, I was reading things that, and these are very respected teachers, but they were just wrong, and I knew it. And they were saying, when you get there, you will think a thought, and it'll be instantly a reality. You decide, you think about an apple, and it's there in your hand. And I said, no way. I said, the whole psyche of the collective humanity, it couldn't handle that, wouldn't know how to deal with that kind of radical change. And so,
because even if it's oneness, some of it's going to be very dissonance, right?
Well, like, for example, you know, there are, I guess, at every level, there is the downside. It's not really a downside, but it's, for example, that great sensitivity that I have caused me to go through the death throes of a woman that was a friend of mine that was actually dying back east. I was actually in California, and she had a ruptured appendix the day before, and what had happened is that she hadn't gone to get help, and so it had the poison had gone up into the lungs, and it restricted, the lungs were no longer useful, so she could not get help. And anyway, I started experiencing, I heard something pop. It felt like it was in my body. It sounded like it. I felt this liquid going up from my lower abdominal area, mm-hmm, into my chest area, and I felt like I was dying. I tried to call 911. I couldn't even raise my arms to dial. I was in a motel at the time. I had been camping. And so finally I was able to do it, and I called her. It was 2 o'clock in the morning back in the east, and so I woke her up, and I told her she had to get down. I didn't even ask questions to the hospital, right away to the emergency. And she said, well, I did. I had these pains yesterday, and I went with my sister. We waited for 8 hours in the emergency. She didn't have insurance, so guess what? And they still hadn't taken me, and my sister got tired of waiting, and so we came home. I said, you need to go now. And she waited till the next morning, but it was too late. And
so she
passed. Things like that happen. That's not something you love.
Well, no, but can you talk a little bit more about the dying process? Because obviously that's part of the thing that we can be empowered as we do. In her case, she was less conscious about it as being a transition.
Yes, in her case she was. But we can prepare people for the dying process. One of the things that I'd like to point out, and it's not in this book, but that our funeral industry and organized religion has really got it turned around. Everything is geared toward comforting the bereaved. When in other cultures, in India, Egypt, the indigenous tribes all over the world, everything is geared toward guiding the recently departed loved one through the dream world, through the bardo, into the light world,
I love
the
that.
Heaven worlds.
I love that.
Yeah, and so what happens is we have loved ones, friends, family members that cross over, and they end up hanging around the other family members. And the problem is they have not had a chance to be healed. So they carry the vibration in their aura of whatever sickness they have. They carry the vibration of whatever emotional problems they have. What they had while on earth. And so that begins to affect the living loved ones and kin. And you start feeling this deep depression, this anxiety, this panic, or you begin having health problems that you don't know where they came from. And it is because that loved one is hanging around. I had one quick story. A woman came to me years ago from the Mayo Clinic. This is when I first began to realize the problem we have. She was supposedly had two terminal illnesses. The doctors were sending her to the Mayo Clinic because she wasn't responding to treatment. And she wanted just a reading to see what I picked up. And I started attuning to her, and I said, you don't have a problem. And she said, what? And I said, did someone recently die? And she said, yeah, a friend died 6 months ago, my best friend. And she said, oh, my God, I've got the same problem she had.
Yeah, see.
These are the same things she died of. And then she said, oh, my God, I have recently taken up two pastimes, two hobbies. These are things I never would have been interested in, but these are things that she was in. And she realized she was being overshadowed by a friend who had attached to her. So that's the problem.
We have to end, unfortunately, but this is a subject I'd love to have you back on someday to get into this as well.
Oh, I'd love to talk about it.
Yeah, we need to really educate ourselves. But Peter Calhoun, you are, very, very inspiring. You make me feel like it's possible to be really empowered over a limited life. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Veronica. It's an honor to be on your show.
And it's an honor to talk with you and look at your book, Life Without Limit. And also, checking your website for those workshops seems like a really good idea.
Yeah, petercalhoun.com. We'd love to have you. We still have openings. And I'd love to talk with some of you privately.
Very exciting. Thank you very much for listening to Paradigm Shifters. And remember, this will be podcasted for all of you tomorrow, so you can help yourself. Many, many blessings. Good night, and thank you.